Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm betting that almost all our listeners have some awareness that the New York State Fair is coming. It begins August 25th and runs through September 5th. My guest today is Troy Woffner, the fair's acting director. Troy's been in that position since 2014, and prior to that, he was assistant director for the fair. Troy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Let me start with a detail, your title. You're the acting director, but not really acting. Explain your status as director of the State Fair.
Well, as you pointed out, I started in 2010 as assistant director. There was some management changes. One director left. They brought in another one who then left, and they did a search. In the interim, they appointed me acting director, and now I'm 3 years into that title. So it seems, it's going well. Why ruin a good thing?
And my understanding is your appointment permanently is kind of pending a bureaucratic thing.
Correct. It's state government, so there's always a bureaucratic process for everything, including appointing somebody to a job. So sooner or later, it'll probably happen. And I'm just happy to be able to work at the fair.
And give me a quick history lesson. Why did the fair end up in Syracuse? Is it just because we're in the middle of the state?
The first fair it was held in Syracuse. Then it moved around and it went to New York City, Saratoga, Utica, hit various places around the state of New York. And then Mr. Geddes actually donated the land that the fair now sits on. And the Agricultural Society, when it originated, it was not a state-run fair. It was run by an agricultural society. They started it. It takes a lot of resources to operate one of those. The Ag Society was struggling, so the state then took it over and began building buildings. And for a long time, the fair was actually run by a state authority. That was dissolved a couple of years ago. Now it's actually a division of a state agency.
And there have been a lot of renovations in recent years to the fair and the fairgrounds. And so if someone hasn't visited the fair in a while, what are some of the new things that they're going to find there?
We started several years ago when I got there just renovating buildings and doing the inside. And we each year we get an annual capital appropriation from the legislature and the governor. And that kept us going until last year when the governor actually put forth a $50 million proposal to fund a major expansion of the fairgrounds or major renovation. The first major renovation of the fairgrounds in probably about 90 years. Before that, we'd renovate buildings, we'd pave roads, we'd change roofs, but there was never a wholesale change. So the governor came forth with $50 million, and we spent about the last year implementing those changes, designing those changes, building those changes.
And so what are the things that people might notice, or what are the important things that maybe they won't see that are in the infrastructure?
The first thing people are going to notice is basically our main gate, which is gate one. It takes about 50 to 60% of the people who come to the fair pass through there. So it's really our front door. And you always want the front door in your house to look nice. So we went through and we tore down the existing structure. It was like a neo-70s design. And we replaced it with a stone and arch structure that's actually reminiscent of the original carriage gate that was there in the early 1900s. We replicated it. We made it bigger. It's this gorgeous structure. We made a concrete walkway all the way in so it matches, so you're not hitting different types of pavement, to a kind of a new entry once you get in with LED signage that's for wayfinding, that's for advertising. That's really probably the one change the people have noticed being built. In the back corner of the fairgrounds, we took down the grandstand, we took out the track, and we opened up basically 63 acres of land. And, from that, we put in a new 315-spot RV park. We put in a new midway that's about 20% bigger than the old midway. It's 13 acres of pavement. It has a kiddie land in it that's grass. And then we have a new commercial area. It's really the first time when – if you want to think of the fair as a city, because during those 12 days, we become a city with emergency services and everything. We now have a historic district where the old buildings are around Chevy Court. We have a residential district where the RV park is. We have a commercial district where the midway is. And we have an agricultural district where the Coliseum, the dairy barn, all of those are. So it's actually a very functional, movable space now. And then, as you said, people at some point are going to say, what did you spend $45 million on? A lot of that goes into infrastructure. It was old infrastructure. So we went through and we replaced and remediated as we went. And now we have building sites which are shovel ready, if we're able to build some buildings in the future.
And you mentioned the grandstand. So that grandstand for the concerts in particular during the fair is no more. And my understanding then that the significant music at the fairgrounds now takes place at the smaller Chevy Court. And the amphitheater on Onondaga Lake is now the county's big venue for public concerts. So how's that relationship being managed during the time when the fair is on? How are you going about coordinating that?
Well, you know, we worked with the county, you know, and you're right. We took down the grandstand, which was our paid venue, and we're focusing just on Chevy Court, which is a free concert venue. So this year we have from Kesha to Flo Rida to Brian Wilson and Pet Sounds. And then you have the county with their gorgeous new facility. And, you know, we worked with them to make sure the acts they booked, you know, we didn't have the same genres on the same night because we haven't, you know, we're obviously not going to compete with them. It's a fun, both are good facilities. And, you know, they programmed four nights of concerts. We programmed 23 different concerts over 12 days. And a lot of it was just making sure that the genres don't match each other. We didn't want two country because the acts going into the amphitheater are acts that play stadiums, that play amphitheaters, or they're paid ticket venue concerts. The acts we get are either generally on their way up or slightly on their way down. Great acts. You know what I mean? Every one of them is a great act, but they're not.
Brian Wilson's not listening, right?
That's what I was worried about. Every act is a good act, but they're not necessarily acts that you're going to pay $100 anymore to see. So we put them out there for free, and that's how we can draw 20 or 30,000 to some of these concerts.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Troy Woffner, the acting director of the New York State Fair. Some bigger, broader questions now. What's the role that you think the state fair plays in the state's public culture? Let me be devil's advocate for a minute here in this question. One could observe that the trinkets that you can buy on the Midway are now readily available online, and the food, except perhaps for a deep-fried Thanksgiving dinner sandwich, which you didn't bring me today, can be found in local restaurants or grocery stores. So what is the role that the state fair plays in the state's public culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in some ways, we're just competition for another entertainment dollar or competition for another trinket dollar. But really, you know, we love to talk about the deep-fried turkey sandwich, which I'll be happy to share with you during the fair. You know, we talk about the great concerts on Chevy Court. We talk about all the Midway and carnival rides. But really what sets us apart from either, you know, the QVCs or the Amazons of the world or the Darien Lakes of the world is we're a state fair. So our core mission is agriculture. We were set up and we continue to hold that as our mission to promote everything that has to do with New York agriculture. Now, you know, 100 years ago, that was cows, chickens, and horses. Now it's cows, chickens, horses, distilled spirits, beer, wine, you know, guinea pigs. We do it all now, as well as the old traditional quilting competitions. You know, so you come there and you may come for the Chevy Court concert, but then you wander around. You get to learn about the animals in the barns. You get to learn about the wine being made. You get to learn about, you know, the quilt competitions and the table setting competitions. That's really what sets us apart from everything. Now, you know, agriculture being our mission, typically a mission is what you lose money on, and we lose money on agriculture, but it's our mission, so we're happy to. So we make all of that up with the trinkets being sold on the fairgrounds, with the concerts being held, with the carnival rides. That way we're able to host the state fair.
And is there some kind of aspirational role or function that you're hoping that the state fair grows into, some new frontier for what it means to the state? And if so, what are some of the ideas that you might be kicking around to help bring it there?
You know, I don't know if it's an aspirational role because I think just by our mission, we'll always be agriculturally oriented. I think part of the problem is – and I grew up in Central New York, so I came to the fair. I was always a fair fan. But I think part of it was always viewed as, you know, kind of the Onondaga County Fair on steroids. It's really the great New York State Fair. So what we've done over the last several years is really expand our footprint beyond the core Central New York counties. And we've reached out to more than just the city of Syracuse. And we want to be particularly sensitive to the different constituencies, you know, whether it's the LGBT community, the minority communities. You know, we have a great Native American village on the grounds. So we've expanded our marketing efforts into all those areas. So I guess the aspirational role is really to continue to grow as a state fair, but really diversify our audience so it really reflects New York State as a whole.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about that, and this is – you've given me a good opening to do it here, but – you say you don't want it to be just the Onondaga County Fair on steroids, and I was wondering about that. Is the New York State Fair really the central New York fair rather than the statewide fair? And I've done a little digging on this and discovered, for example, that the Erie County Fair draws more visitors than the New York State Fair. So does that – is simply the attendance something that you're worried about and or are you thinking about where the attendance is coming from? Where do you see it is right now and where should it be?
You know, attendance is the most public and understandable measure that we get measured by every year. And people get how many people came this year, how many people came last year. You know, it's important to us because obviously we want to be the biggest fair in the state of New York. But more than that, we also look at revenue. We look at, you know, the exit surveys we do. And this year we actually started, you know, sort of just doing general surveys about why do you come to the fair, but why don't you come to the fair? Because that's important too. Because I don't want the state fair to be just recognized as a central New York fair. It's really meant to draw people from across the state. And that's kind of been our goal, is to really reach our tentacles out farther and farther and just to keep drawing from across New York State. And, you know, at the end of the day, that'll help our attendance, which is phenomenal. But it'll also just really give a feel, because I think the feel to the vendors, to a lot of fairgoers, is just a central New York fair. And it's not. It's really the state fair.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Troy Woffner. He's the acting director of the New York State Fair. So let's go back to the renovations we were talking about before and think of the future and think of some of the things that you talked about where you'd like to see the fair go into the future. Let's say that the governor gave you another $200 million. Let's think big. What are some of the things that you would like to do to expand the fair, to make it even more interesting?
You know, I think I can give you my take on this, and it's certainly not approved by anybody other than myself. But I think part of finishing the project, if we had $200 million, is putting up more multi-use buildings. Because, you know, when you look at – we've talked mainly about the 12 days, but it's really the other 50 weeks a year where we have an impact too. And, you know, there's much larger horse shows we can bring in. There's much larger motor sports shows we can bring in. There's a lot of very big shows that if we had the facilities to host them could come to Syracuse. And there are shows that probably otherwise wouldn't come, whether it's a Mecum Auction style show or something like that. So I think at least one or two other fairly large buildings. And I think, you know, just opening up the grounds a little more. Obviously, we need to address parking as we go along. But the final part of that is the connection between the state fairgrounds and the amphitheater, the state fairgrounds and the Village of Solvay, and the state fairgrounds and just Lakeland or State Fair Boulevard right across. You know, there have been ideas floated in the past, whether it's a monorail or a cable car to connect, you know, the fairgrounds with the amphitheater. You know, the county is doing a lot of work on Bridge Street to create a promenade along there to really bring people from the Village of Solvay. And we've actually – part of our initial plan that we looked at was actually developing some of the land we own across the street from the fairgrounds proper into hotels, you know, stores, restaurants, that sort of thing. Because the more people we draw to the fairgrounds, the more they'll need those services. And the bigger types of shows you go after, they want those services fairly close.
And part of what you're talking about there involves – financial partnerships or financial relationships of a kind. And I did want to ask you, Governor Cuomo has announced an interest in privatizing the fair's operations. So what's your take on that? Will that put at risk the local commitments that you're talking about of the fair when it comes to hiring and vendors and thinking about activities and structuring that? Could it put some of the traditional attractions, you mentioned the core mission of agriculture, could it put some of that don't make money at risk?
You know, I think that's a good question. I think when the governor announced that, he didn't really define what he meant. I mean, and he may have known and just didn't define it. But I think there's a couple ways of looking at it. If you privatize the entire fair, meaning the 12 days and the other 50 weeks a year, you know, I think there's a lot of concern that's been expressed by agricultural communities, the local community, vendors. Once you do that, you're basically – there's a chance you'll do away with the agriculture, which is a money-losing event for us, but once again, our mission. You'll do away with the connection of vendors. And if you really went to a large company who does this, you know, there's a chance they'll bring in their own concession companies. They'll bring in their own – whoever they have deals with across the state, and it'll become a very homogenized feel. You know, while we want uniformity and branding and signage and everything, part of the fun of the fair is you get an experience of different foods, of different peoples, of different cultures, of different attractions. One company who actually – if you brought in a big enough company, there's a chance it just becomes ho-hum. It becomes Darien Lake, which nothing against Darien Lake. But you know, there's a feel to it that we don't have, that we don't want, that I think helps the fair survive.
And you must look around at – other state fairs in order to get ideas and to compare yourself against them. And so New York's is obviously the best. I won't even ask you that. But what would you say is the second best state fair out there in the country?
You know, I think it depends on what you're looking for. Certainly, you know, the Texas State Fair, you know, everything's bigger in Texas. And they do that with Big Tex out front, the Texas State Fair.
Yeah, my spouse has told me about her experiences at the Texas State Fair.
You know, it's a phenomenal state fair. They do a nice job. It's a great facility. It's a big facility. Yeah, I think if you're looking for that traditional New England feel, I think the Big E in Springfield, which is really the state fair of the New England states, has a great feel to it. It has a little bit of what we have. Part of what sets us apart from the Arizona State Fairgrounds, and I'm not beating up on Arizona, but you know, you go there and it's basically tin buildings that have been put up on a plot of land. You come to the New York State Fair or even the Big E, you have these gorgeous old buildings they don't build anymore. That's kind of our historic district with the Center of Progress and the horticulture and the Art Deco tiles and the park pond and the columns of the colonnade and, you know, now the new front entrance, which bleeds into all of that.
It does have that old park feel, and I think that is part of the attraction. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Troy Woffner, the acting director of the New York State Fair. You mentioned quilting, I think, quilting competitions at one point earlier in the conversation. I wanted to ask you, there are a lot of competitions at the fair, and they've expanded on the traditional ones, such as Best Livestock or Best Jams, Best Quilt and such. What are some of the stranger and more interesting categories of these competitions? And who tends to come and want to compete in them?
You know, probably one of the more interesting ones, strange ones, whatever we want to call it, that have been introduced in the last couple of years is the Bucket of Junk competition, where, you know, it's a limited number of contestants. It might be 18. We give out 18 of these same buckets of junk, and we rate them on what the person comes back with. They have to use every part in it, and they can't add anything to it, and whatever they can build out of it is what gets rated. And, you know, I always say I don't have a lot of skill in life, so I'm impressed when people come in and they've taken this bucket of, you know, PVC pipe and steel pipe and they've turned it into, you know, a robot without the engine, and it's absolutely amazing. But, you know, the competitions, these aren't the stranger ones, but I think people come to the fair and there are a lot of great things to see. You know, we have a cake decorating competition. Mm. Cakes change every day, and the time and energy that's put into these people decorating, there's always at least one or two which have a full midway made out of sugar set up on top of them. We have a fine arts competition in the Art and Home Center, which I think is second to none in terms of amateur art. And, you know, we have all – the quilt competition is just neat when you think somebody took the time to quilt, sew all this together, quilt it together, and they've come up with these beautiful pieces of art in their own right. So there's a lot of great little things out there, great little nuggets at the fair most people probably don't get to see.
And I imagine that the experience for – and that's a fairly large number of people when you add it all up – for them is going to be a lot deeper and more profound than, you know, the folks that just come and enjoy the things. I mean, that may be part of your mission too, I would think, is – providing that experience for citizens of the state to have that chance to show what it is that they can do or they can make.
Oh, it is. And it's amazing how much time and energy people put into it. And, you know, the contestants, we have tens of thousands of people who enter into our competitions. And the time and energy they put into it is just amazing. And the stuff they come out with, whether it's Bucket of Junk, Fine Arts, or even the dairy cattle. I mean, you go in and these are not, you know, your father's dairy cattle. These are prize-winning cows that are worth a tremendous amount of money because of the genetics. And you have these kids out there who it's in their generation. I mean, they've done this for generations, shown cattle at the state fair. And it's just a great story. They sleep with their cows. They feed their cows. They're right there for their cows.
So Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are both New Yorkers. Are there plans that you're aware of for either of them to be at the fair?
Yeah, they're not, but we'd welcome either one or both, hopefully not on the same day.
And have you had experience with this in the past? I mean, what is that process like when you get a high-profile political figure coming to the fair? I mean, a lot of them do come to the fair. I mean, Schumer makes a habit of it. Is there a negotiation there, like, I'm going to go here, but I'm not going to go there? And, you know, how does that go?
You know, when President and Mrs. Clinton came before, obviously it was a long time ago. I don't think a lot of the current administration was there, but it had to have been a fun show. But when you start talking about the, you know, the Schumers and the Gillibrands, Schumer is a great one to watch at the fair because he doesn't tell us when he's coming. He just shows up, and he will get there at 9 o'clock in the morning. He'll spend till 9 o'clock at night. He'll introduce both acts on Chevy Corps, whether we want him to or not, and he'll shake every hand on the fairgrounds. And he is like a maniac out there. I mean, he's the Energizer Bunny out there working. Then you have, you know, Senator Gillibrand comes in and does does her thing and you know, very thoughtful and respectful. And, you know, there isn't a lot of negotiation. We always say, you know, we're here to help. Let us know what you need, whether it's state police security or somebody to walk around with, or you want to meet with a specific group of people. At the end of the day, you know, we just want to be as helpful as we can. And we don't really get into the party affiliation or anything. We just, you know, want to get people in and out as safely and quickly as possible.
I would think, however, that if you were to have Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton come, you'd have to be worried about the protests and the divisions and potential conflict in the street. I mean, you must be worrying about this.
You know, if either one came, you know, we have a free speech area at all of our gates. I assume they'd be overflowing for both of them. It's the traditional protest area. And, you know, the amount of security, Secret Service and time that would go into that, you know, on the one hand, it would be the greatest thing going in terms of having one or both of them come. On the other hand, it would probably shut the fair down for the day in terms of attendance and people coming, because it would just close the highways. And you're right. Then you have the other part of it, which this is a very funny year in politics and in life as you watch what's going on all over the world. And people are more and more crowding to the streets and letting their rights be known. And, you know, we'd assume that would happen at the state fair. And we'd, you know, obviously safety at that point is our number one concern.
So we just have a minute or so left, and I've made some confessions on recent programs. I'm going to make another one here. I've not been to the fair in a while.
Oh, my gosh.
So make your best elevator pitch to get me back besides giving me a free ticket.
Which we don't do anymore. Yeah, you know, here's what I'd tell you. If you want to come and you want to see the state fair is great. You come and you get to learn about all different things. I mean, you know, I've already talked about the agriculture, the competitions, the music. If nothing else, it is a great time to come and watch culture at its best, because it draws a wide swath of people from every demographic and culture that we have in New York State. And it's just really between the food and the animals and the music. I've always liked the fair because it's the controlled chaos. It's the battering of your five senses for a few hours to come and just sit. And even if you do nothing but sit on a park bench and watch people walk by, it is just such a glimpse into American life and Americana. And that's where we're still above Darien Lake in a lot of ways. You know, we have that sense of Americana that comes with our history. If nothing else, it's worth coming for that. And I'll buy you – I won't give you a ticket, but I'll buy you a deep-fried Thanksgiving sandwich.
Oh, okay. Sold. That was Troy Wafner. And this year, the New York State Fair runs from August 25th through September 5th. Troy, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.